the book that destroyed the JFK conspiracy theories for all time. Vincent Bugliosi's Reclaiming History, this time on Audibly Speaking.
Hi, I'm Rick Ryman, host of Audibly Speaking, a show on the stories behind the stories of our time. By sounding out on these stories, we give voice to them and hear them for the first time. From the news of the day to history and literature, from audiobooks to leaders on the stump, we examine the backstories of our time, Audibly Speaking.
In this episode, I want to discuss Vincent Bugliosi's 2007 book, Reclaiming History, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The reason I'd like to look at this is because this book is probably the most comprehensive examination of the assassination of any book ever published, and it's certainly one of the top 10 books to be recommended by anyone who wants to have a firm grasp of what happened on November 22, 1963. Now, Bugliosi's book is Bugliosi's book. It's very much a reflection of the mind of Vincent Bugliosi and of his style as well. And there are some enormous strengths to that style, but there are also some weaknesses, perhaps. This will be a gentle review because there's so much to admire in Bugliosi's book. For one thing, it's 1,600 pages long. It's probably, I'm sure it's the longest book on the JFK assassination that has ever been published. It was published by a premier publisher, Norton and Company, and it is overwhelming to the degree that it examines seemingly almost every facet of the JFK assassination that one can imagine. It was published in 2007, and it's a notable effort to solve every problem or answer every question related to the JFK assassination. And I would say that if Bugliosi's book could not tamp down conspiracy thinking, then we are pretty sure that no book will tamp that conspiracy ideization down. There's just no way. If Bugliosi couldn't do it, nobody can. And what I mean by that is that Bugliosi actually attempted something that I doubt anyone else would attempt, and that is to take every single conspiracy theory that has ever been imagined or spun since 1963 and to track that down to actually show how that conspiracy theory and all of those conspiracy theories in total could not possibly be correct, that every one of them is in fact incorrect. Because as Bugliosi commandingly puts it in his book and in his various media appearances where he has talked about his book, he says that really the JFK assassination is two stories in one. On the one hand, it's a simple murder case. And in fact, if you look at it square in the face, it is a simple case. Although astonishingly, it has become something else, as Bugliosi points out, the second story, which is the most complex and tangled and mysterious investigation in the history of the world. Now, of course, what Bugliosi is saying is that the first story, a simple murder case, not necessarily the simplest, but certainly a simple one, is the real JFK case. And what conspiracy theory writers have done is to convince people that it is a tangled mess, that it is a complex tissue of layer upon layer of mystery, and that nobody can possibly disentangle it. Well, Bugliosi tries. So he confronts not only the reality of the assassination, but also the myth. And in 1,600 pages, he spends, I suppose, about half of those pages showing the evidence that convicts Lee Harvey Oswald, and only Lee Harvey Oswald, the evidence that shows that no conspiracy group in their right mind would possibly pick Oswald to be their man in Dallas to shoot JFK. But history doesn't pay attention to rational factors. And so Oswald by himself was able to pull off the assassination, which is why it has become such a mammoth event in American history. The improbable, the nearly impossible, actually happened, that a ne'er-do-well who could not succeed at anything in his life finally succeeded in the one shattering thing he did towards the end of his life, namely kill the President of the United States. History doesn't pay attention to rationalities, but certainly motives have to be in the realm of the rational. And if Oswald had motives, that is, it's possible, as Bugliosi points out, that if Lee Harvey Oswald was alive today, he could not explain why he shot JFK. And I think this is another brilliant insight of Bugliosi's, that when we look at motive, it's often a thing that cannot be discerned even by the person who did the deed. It's possible that Oswald had a mix of emotions on November 22nd, and that collectively those emotions led him to fire the shot that killed JFK. Certainly he had some reason or set of reasons for killing JFK, because we know that he did it. But actually trying to figure out those motives in a way that makes sense, that makes some sort of logical sense, may be beyond the ability of anyone to reconstruct at this late date. And in fact, it might have even been beyond the ability of Lee Harvey Oswald himself to explain to himself. And we will never know, as Bugliosi says, what Oswald's real motives were. But Bugliosi also points out that in a trial, you don't have to prove motive. If someone doesn't have a motive, it makes it more difficult to convict that person, because juries expect a motive to be there, and they expect the prosecution to supply a motive. But if you can compile the evidence to prove that somebody killed somebody else, then that is sufficient to convict that somebody and to send them to prison or even the electric chair. Motive is technically not a requirement. And sometimes it's difficult to reconstruct, especially when you talk about insane people. The man that shot the mayor of Chicago, who was seated next to President-elect Franklin D. Roosevelt in February 1933, said that he shot at Roosevelt and killed the mayor of Chicago because his stomach constantly hurt. And so what we have is a motive that comes from the killer. It makes no sense whatsoever, but it made sense to the killer, and it may or may not have been the killer's true motivation. How in the world can we possibly tell when the evidence is so spare? And certainly in the case of Oswald, it's spare because he only lived another 48 hours after the assassination, and he never admitted to the obvious fact that he did, in fact, kill JFK. Now, what's interesting, if we just look at the chapter titles in Bugliosi's book, we can see how it's organized. First of all, he has book one, which is called Matters of Fact, What Happened? And then he has book two, Delusions of Conspiracy, What Did Not Happen? So as I say, the book is divided into two, and I suppose it is those two dichotomous sides of the assassination that he has mentioned in his media interviews. In other words, it's a simple murder case. That's book one. And book two is the mythical layers to the assassination that shouldn't be there. that is, conspiracy theories that people have not had the time to track down, because just as one is revealed to be a tissue of nonsense, another one takes its place, and it's very hard for the truth to catch up when the lies are ricocheting around the world in such rapid fashion. So Bugliosi has these two parts to his book. One part is what really happened, and the second is delusions of conspiracy, what did not happen. So for book one, he has a long chapter, a very long chapter, it's more than 300 pages long, called 4 Days in November, where he takes you through that traumatic assassination weekend. And then the next chapter is an overview of the investigations, starting with the Warren Commission. There is a separate chapter on President Kennedy's autopsy and the location of the gunshot wounds. Then, of course, a separate chapter on the Zapruder film, as Bugliosi puts it, the most famous home movie ever made. Then, of course, you have to have a chapter on Lee Harvey Oswald. And this chapter turns out to be more than 200 pages long, because Bugliosi naturally gives you chapter and verse, and he brilliantly goes way deep into the story of Lee Harvey Oswald's early life and, of course, his maturation into a Soviet defector and eventually a presidential assassin. Then there's a chapter on Oswald's ownership and possession of the rifle found on the sixth floor. That's very hard evidence against Oswald. There's a chapter on identification of the murder weapon, Oswald's location at the sniper's nest, and so-called evidence of his innocence, which Bugliosi deconstructs and disproves. And then there's a separate chapter on the grassy knoll, which of course has entered the mythology, and Bugliosi makes short work of that. Although he spends a very short amount of time, relatively speaking, on that, which is about 15 pages. Then he has a conversation with Dr. Cyril Wecht, who is one of the conspiracy theorists whom most rational thinkers think is a little off the mark, to put it mildly. Then there's a chapter on Secret Service agents on the grassy knoll, which was an allegation that, once again, Bugliosi shows to be pretty much a melange of mythification. And then he has a chapter on what is called the zanies and others who have their say. And this brings out a point about Bugliosi's book that also needs to be pointed out, and that is Bugliosi is not someone to suffer fools lightly. He tends to be very sarcastic. Whenever you see him in interviews, he's often sarcastic, and he's very sarcastic throughout this book. And that kind of detracts from the scholarly character of the book. A scholar generally does not adopt an attitude in writing their book. They're supposed to be objective. They're supposed to be very much like the omniscient observer who tells you just the facts, along with their interpretations, of course, but does not layer upon those facts and interpretations a lot of attitude and a lot of arched eyebrows and so on. People don't want to read that. They don't find it convincing, for one thing, because attitude and sarcasm do not amount to evidence. But perhaps Bugliosi should be forgiven the sarcasm, because after all, he did write a book of 1,600 pages, and although maybe 25 pages of that is rich sarcasm that has no value towards proving his case, you still have over 1,600 pages of evidence that does have considerable value. So perhaps we can forgive Bugliosi the 25 pages or so of sarcasm. And finally, there's a chapter in book one called Other Assassins, Other Alleged Assassins. And Bugliosi also deals with the question of motive and finally summarizes Oswald's guilt. Now, in book two, we have a history of the conspiracy movement. And I think this is one of the best things about his book, because we have never had, to my mind, a book or an article, a scholarly article, that has traced the historiography of conspiracy theorizing. Because in the beginning, in 1963 and 64, and for a few years thereafter, there were actually books published that purported to demonstrate the existence of a conspiracy. It wasn't just blogs or the equivalent of the 1960s. It was actually full-fledged books. Now, they were not written by professional historians, so we can't call it historiography exactly, but there is a history of writing on the assassination, which has often gone ignored, or it has been oversimplified to be the writings of Mark Lane and Ed Epstein. And in fact, there's a much richer vein of conspiracy theorizing than just the writings of those two writers. So Bugliosi is to be thanked for starting his book two with an overall history of the conspiracy movement. But then he turns to Mark Lane. He talks about mysterious and suspicious deaths. And of course, he points out that these notions that people who argued that there was a conspiracy ended up dead is itself an absurd and specious collection of myths. Then we have a chapter on the so-called second Oswald, which is also one of the wastes of time that the conspiracy community has put the country through. And then an article about David Lifton and the supposed alteration of the president's body, one of the more outrageous and gruesome and purple and preposterous conspiracy theories that there has ever been. You know, if half of these conspiracy theories had any kind of substance to them, it would be totally unbelievable, because there is no way any event in human history could bear the weight of so many conspiracies coming together. So even the sheer listing of these conspiracy theories amounts to a disapproval of them. But again, Bugliosi spent 20 years tracking all of them down and showing that all of them led nowhere. And in fact, it's often been remarked that not all of these conspiracy theories can be right, but all of them can be wrong. And then there's a chapter on Ruby and the mob, which reminds us that even though Ruby had mob connections, and even though it's often said that the mob had a motive to kill President Kennedy, Bugliosi brings us back to sanity and reminds us that the mob also had a motive not to kill Kennedy. Namely, that they would have been mopped up and put out of business forever had they had anything to do with the murder of any president, whether it was Kennedy or someone else. That's why when it's often said, Lyndon Johnson had a motive to kill Kennedy because he would become president himself. Well, didn't Lyndon Johnson have a motive not to kill Kennedy? Namely, he didn't want to go to jail or to the chair. So these ideas that someone has a motive because maybe they don't like the president is one of the most absurd and childish statements that prosecutors have ever heard. And Bugliosi has no patience for it, which certainly makes sense. Then he has a chapter on organized crime, the CIA, FBI. These are all separate chapters. A separate chapter on the Secret Service. Even the Secret Service has been pointed at as a potential conspirator against the president. Then there's the KGB, and of course the right wing. There's a separate chapter on LBJ, and then there are chapters on Cuba, which are particularly interesting sidelights in this book by Bugliosi, because Cuba was a very important background history to the assassination. Not in the way some people think, though. Some people think that Castro killed Kennedy before Kennedy could get to Castro. In fact, Lyndon Johnson ultimately came to that conclusion late in his presidency and probably never wavered in thinking that for the rest of Johnson's life. But the fact of the matter was that Lee Harvey Oswald has always been underestimated as being somehow some kind of fool, when in fact Lee Harvey Oswald had a higher than average intelligence and was a devoted foot soldier for Castro, even though Castro never knew that Oswald existed before the assassination. And Oswald, on his own, decided to take vengeance on Kennedy for Kennedy's plots against Castro, which were not a secret in the newspapers of 1963. Now, many people did not believe Castro when Castro said the CIA was plotting to assassinate him, but it just so happens that Lee Harvey Oswald did believe it. And on that basis, he set his sights for Kennedy when he found that Kennedy was going to be within his sights on November 22, 1963. There's also a chapter on the Odio incident and the anti-Castro Cuban exiles, and a chapter on the very real cover-up by the CIA and FBI in the Warren Commission's investigations of the assassinations. That was real enough, but what the CIA and FBI were covering up was not a non-existent plot by the CIA and FBI to kill Kennedy. That didn't exist. What they were covering up was the fact that they knew more about Lee Harvey Oswald in the days before the assassination than was comfortable. That is, they should have been following him more closely, and they were blundering. And because they wanted to cover up their blundering, they created more suspicion in the eyes of the American people than ought to have existed. Then Bugliosi deals with Jim Garrison's prosecution of Clay Shaw and Oliver Stone's movie JFK, and the conclusion of no conspiracy. Finally, Bugliosi has what he calls bookends, which is six chapters where he wraps things up. One of these is the murder trial of Jack Ruby, a conversation with Marina Oswald, a chapter on the people and groups involved in the plot to kill Kennedy, coincidences of the Lincoln and Kennedy assassination, and what we should make about those. And finally, an epilogue where he wraps things up for once and for all. So I hope that it is clear by now that Vincent Bugliosi's magnificent book, Reclaiming History, about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, is a book that will stand the test of time. It may be the finest book, the most revealing, the most informative, the most solidifying book in terms of pinning down the reality that there was no conspiracy in the assassination of President Kennedy. There didn't have to be a conspiracy, that Lee Harvey Oswald not only did do it all by himself, but could do it all by himself. And in fact, all the stars, unfortunately, the stars of tragedy, aligned, unfortunately, in the direction of assassination on November 22, 1963. So Bugliosi's book is available as an audiobook. It's also available as an ebook, and you can still get it as a used hardcover on various online bookseller sites. This has been a review of the book by Rick Ryman, and I hope you've enjoyed it. And until next time on Audibly Speaking, happy listening.
That's it for today's episode of audiblyspeaking.com. New podcast episodes appear on audiblyspeaking.com approximately once every 2 weeks. Please subscribe to Audibly Speaking on iTunes or whatever podcast aggregator you enjoy. Until next time, this is Rick Ryman. Happy listening.